This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
When you lose 50% of the recycling locations in Northern California, that means that there's probably dozens of communities that have no recycling location in their community. If you want to recycle your beverage containers, you're having to drive to the next town or the next county to find a place to get your nickels back.
In 2013, California boasted a recycling rate of 85%. In 2017, that number is now 79%. That's the first time it's dipped below 80% since 2008. Why is the most populous state in the union moving in the wrong direction on this important indicator? This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Mark Murray, Executive Director of Californians Against Waste, a nonprofit environmental group that was founded 40 years ago to advocate for beverage container recycling in the state. He'll explain this troubling trend and talk about what can be done to get California's recycling program back on its previous trajectory. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Mark Murray. He's the Executive Director of Californians Against Waste. Mark, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Good to be here.
Give us an idea of where California stacks up in terms of its overall recycling compared to some other large states like Texas or New York.
Well, California has been a leader in adoption of waste reduction and recycling goals going back to 1986 with the bottle bill and 1989 with the state's comprehensive 50% recycling goal. And so the state has set the targets, has implemented the policies, and has succeeded in achieving 50% waste reduction and recycling. So I don't know of any other state that has achieved that level of waste reduction and recycling targets. So I think we're leaders in that. In addition to those kind of broad waste reduction and recycling goals, we've gone after specific problem products and required the producers and ultimately the consumers of those products to take responsibility for getting those products and materials recycled or ultimately having to phase them out of the marketplace.
And if somebody was looking at a chart seeing the evolution of the California recycling program, it would just be a nice steady rise. But then just the last couple of years, we've seen something happen. Why don't you explain where we are right now and why it's happening?
The legislature promises the recycling infrastructure in California, and this goes back to 30 years. The legislation promises that recyclers will be compensated to cover the net cost of recycling when the scrap value is insufficient to do that. And that's where we're sitting right now, with the scrap value for plastic, the scrap value for glass, insufficient to cover the cost of collecting, processing, and returning it to manufacturers. So we need the legislature and the administration to hold the industry accountable. And what's happened in the last 3 years is that the calculations of the cost of recycling have undervalued the cost of recycling, because the process that we put in place 30 years ago was a look back. You look back at what was the cost of recycling in the previous year and what was the scrap value in the previous year, and a number is calculated to determine what is the compensation rate for recyclers. The problem is that the scrap value has been dropping at such a fast rate over the last 3 years that looking at last year's scrap value means that recyclers are not getting paid based on what the current lower scrap values are. Secondarily, as California has increased the minimum wage and required recyclers and other businesses to provide health care to workers, those costs have not been included in the calculation of the cost of recycling. Recycling is a labor-intensive enterprise. We calculate the cost of recycling based on the operation of buyback recycling operations, and those operations generally employ folks that are paid the minimum wage or close to the minimum wage. And when you're when you've got a mandate for an increase in the minimum wage in the current year, yet you're relying on labor costs from 18 months ago, the payments aren't covering today's costs. So that's the problem. We need the legislature to authorize the state agency to look at current year scrap values, current year recycling costs, current year labor costs, and compensate recyclers today based on what it's actually costing them, what they're actually receiving in scrap value. So it's complicated, but getting the details right, making sure that we're compensating these small independent recycling businesses in real time means that they can sustain themselves. And right now, these recycling businesses, many of them independent mom-and-pop operations, are not able to sustain themselves because they're getting compensated based on old recycling costs and outdated scrap value data.
Is this just market variance? What are experts attributing this drop to, Mark?
The drop in scrap value for plastic is directly linked to the oversupply of natural gas in the United States and around the globe. We're producing, through because of fracking and new technologies, we're producing so much natural gas that the value of that natural gas has dropped. And certainly, you know, we're seeing this as consumers. We're seeing this in terms of our utility bills are dropping. The price of natural gas is dropping in terms of generating energy. But also, we have to recognize that natural gas is the raw material for making plastic. Interestingly, you can make plastic out of natural gas or petroleum, and it used to be that plastics were made out of petroleum because petroleum was more abundant, petroleum was cheaper. Today, it's reversed. Now it's natural gas is more abundant and cheaper, and so we're making these cheap, single-use plastic packaging and other plastic products out of this very cheap natural gas. Very difficult for recycled plastic to compete in that market. This crisis today is mostly driven by the low prices for plastic, and the low prices for plastic are as a result of an oversupply of natural gas and a very low market price for natural gas.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Mark Murray. He's the executive director of Californians Against Waste. Now, I'm assuming that Californians, Texans, whoever, they're recycling more of their beverage containers than ever before. Is that safe to assume?
The good news is that consumers have bought onto recycling, and we're seeing record levels of general consumer participation in recycling. What we're focused on in California might seem like a first world problem in terms of concerns about a drop in the recycling rate for beverage containers from 85% recycling just 3 years ago down to 79%. So, but in a state as big as California, every 1% drop in recycling means that consumers are getting $12 million less in refund value. And so this 6% drop in recycling is in excess of $70 million of consumer refund values that are not being returned. It means millions of containers every day, million containers every single day are being littered or landfilled today that weren't being littered and landfilled in just as recently as 2013.
So when you're looking at that rate going down from 85 to 79%, you're taking the exact same amount or even more containers, but they're not getting recycled. They're just turning into landfill, essentially?
Correct. Yeah. We've got, we're increasing our consumption of beverages in single-use containers. So 22 billion beverages in single-use containers are consumed in California every single year. And the rate that we're recycling them today is lower than it was in 2013. So we're moving in the wrong direction. And it's important because the California policy is really a model for the nation. And getting it right in California, getting the manufacturers to pay the full cost of recycling is critical to our ability to sell these policies to policymakers in Texas and across the country.
Can you explain that a little bit more? Expand on how it works right now in terms of the manufacturers, how they pay for the recycling, essentially.
Sure. California law requires the state agency that runs the program to calculate what is this net cost of recycling each container type. What's the net cost of recycling glass? What's the net cost of recycling a PET soft drink bottle or an HDPE juice container? And that calculation is a cost per ton. The beverage manufacturers are responsible for paying that cost of recycling, and under the California law, the manufacturers need to pay 65% of that net cost of recycling in the form of a per-container processing fee. So when they're selling the container, actually, when they distribute the container to a retailer, they're required to pay not only the refund value to the state, but also the processing fee. And in the scheme of things, those processing fees are really just a penny or less per container sold. But when you're selling 22 billion containers, that amount of money can add up. And so when the beverage industry is fighting to not have to pay their fair share, that 65% of the cost of recycling, it means that either recyclers don't get paid or we've got to use unredeemed money. And unredeemed money is basically the nickels and dimes from consumers that don't recycle. And those nickels and dimes, while when recycling rates were much lower, there were plenty of those nickels and dimes to cover the cost of recycling. But today, at a 79% recycling rate even, there's not as many of those nickels and dimes. So the beverage manufacturers need to pay a greater share. They've got to increase, and we're talking fractions of a cent. Fractions of a cent per soft drink bottle, per glass bottle, to cover the net cost of recycling. So this processing fee that we have in California is an example of producer responsibility, of requiring the producers to internalize the net cost of recycling their containers. And, when you think about it, what we're doing here in California is, let's think of a glass beer bottle. I go to the store and I buy my six-pack of Sierra Nevada, and I'm paying a refund value, plus I'm paying a processing fee. A processing fee has been internalized into the price of that container. I take my six-pack to the recycling center. I get my nickels back. The recycler gets the processing fee. They get the revenue from that processing fee to cover the cost of recycling. They then take that glass bottle, they send it to a processor, and then the processor sells the glass bottle back to the glass manufacturer so it can go back into making a new glass beer bottle. So we're returning this packaging back to the beverage industry. If they want us to continue to do that, if we want to close the loop on this packaging, it's essential that the manufacturers be willing to cover that net cost of recycling. There's nobody else that can cover that net cost of recycling.
Killed a chicken, thought it was a duck, put him on the table with his legs sticking up. You got to find him and go. You got to find him and go, baby. Well, you high-powered women, sure got to find love and go. Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, you may be old, you may be gray.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Mark Murray. He's the executive director of Californians Against Waste. So, Mark, when we're talking about nickels and dimes, these nickels and dimes add up for a lot of the neediest people in California. Why don't you explain how they're being affected by this downturn in recycling, Mark?
Well, it's important to think about who are the folks that are redeeming their containers for cash. These are folks that are generally low-income people, or in many instances, these are homeless people who are not only are they, you know, redeeming the containers that they might consume themselves, but these are folks who are collecting containers from the side of the road. They're picking containers out of trash cans, or they're collecting them from beaches and parks and other places. It's important to recognize that more than half of single-use beverage containers are consumed outside of the home. These containers are not available for the curbside recycling program. They're consumed, maybe we've gone to the beach, we've gone to the park. Sometimes there aren't even recycling bins available, so they go into a trash can. And there are folks that are out there that are sustaining themselves, that are feeding themselves, that are clothing themselves with the revenue that they get from the redemption, the refund values on beverage containers. I think that many of us think that, oh, well, we've got curbside recycling, and so why do we still need these programs? Two points to understand. Number one, curbside recycling is an expensive recycling operation. When a truck comes to your house every single week, whether you've put out your recyclables or not, that's an expensive collection system. The processing fee system that I'm talking about helps to offset the cost of that curbside recycling system. So when you leave your nickels, when you decide to take my six-pack and put it in my curbside recycling program, those nickels are helping to offset the cost of your curbside program. Secondarily, though, it's important to recognize that even in California, which has virtually universal curbside recycling, 65% of all of the containers that are recycled are actually recycled by individuals going to a buyback recycling center. Part of that is because so many of these containers are consumed outside of the home, but even folks that have curbside recycling, even folks that have access to this weekly collection program, many of them are still redeeming their aluminum cans, they're redeeming their glass bottles, they're redeeming their plastic containers because they want to get their money back.
So how are the convenience zone recycling locations being hit harder than the curbside recycling areas? Is it because homeowners and renters already have a deal with, let's say, here in San Francisco, it's Recology? They're not going to be affected by this drop. They're going to be getting their service. But are these convenience zones the ones that are closing? Because there's a lot of recycling centers that are closing, right?
Yes. Lots of recycling centers are closing. 560 buyback recycling centers have closed in California. So 25% of the collection centers have closed. 17% of the processing facilities have closed in the state of California in the last 15 months. I want to be clear that the entire recycling infrastructure, curbside, buyback, material recovery facilities, they're all hurting because of this drop in scrap value and the failure of the recycling payments to cover that net cost of recycling. But your curbside program has an alternative path to funding.
And what's that?
Every month in San Francisco and across California, you're paying for your curbside recycling program, just like you pay for your garbage. I pay my garbage bill. Embedded in that garbage bill is some money that helps offset the cost of the curbside program. Those costs are going up because of this drop in value and this failure of the recycling cost. But if you're a buyback recycling center, you don't have a ratepayer funding base to cover your costs. And a lot of these independent businesses, both the convenience zones as well as, you know, traditional scrap yards, these were mom-and-pop operations that have no other source of revenue. When that scrap value drops and the payments from the state go down, they've got no other source of income, and so many of them have been forced to close their doors.
What does this drop in scrap values and then the concomitant drop in recycling rates, how is that affecting the urban versus rural recycling split? If we were looking at a map of California, how would the penetration rates look, basically, in terms of who's recycling, in terms of what percentage they're recycling, rural versus urban?
Yeah, so the California law basically determines how many recycling locations that a community needs based on the distribution of supermarkets, of grocery stores. And every grocery store that does more than $2 million worth of business in the state has a basically a half-mile circle drawn around it. And those, each of those circles are required to have a recycling center. Now, there's reasons why some of those convenience zones could be exempt from the requirement. For example, if there is a large community recycling location that maybe is a mile away, you know, not every zone has to have a recycling location. But we've got, if you look throughout the state, that there are some areas. For example, Los Angeles has only lost about 15% of their recycling locations. So Los Angeles County is not experiencing this same absence of recycling opportunity that other areas of the state are. But San Francisco, San Jose, and almost the entirety of Northern California north of Sacramento, these areas have lost well in excess of 50% of their recycling locations. And when you lose 50% of the recycling locations in Northern California, that means that there's probably dozens of communities that have no recycling location in their community. If you want to recycle your beverage containers, you're having to drive to the next town or the next county to find a place to get your nickels back. So the San Francisco situation is a little more complex in the sense that a number of the landlords that own the property that the grocery stores are leasing to operate the grocery store, many of those landlords have kicked out the recycling locations. And so San Francisco is having a dual problem of both higher cost of recycling, diminished opportunity to recycle, but also a problem where some of the landlords, property owners, have decided that they don't want a recycling location. It's like a death spiral in terms of what happens in communities is as the number of recycling locations diminishes, there's increased demand on the recycling locations that are remaining. And so San Francisco, which is an area where, there's less than a million people live in San Francisco, but an additional million people come into San Francisco every single day to work or as tourists.
And drink beverages.
And they drink beverages. And they're not drinking their beverages at their home. They're drinking them outside of the home. Those containers are not available to the curbside recycling program in San Francisco. Instead, they're in trash cans. They're in Golden Gate Park, they're on the beaches, they're in the tourist areas, and there is a population that scavenges those containers, that collects those containers from the parks and from the beaches and from the tourist attractions, from the from Fisherman's Wharf. They collect those containers, they bring them to recycling centers, and so you have a situation with a diminished number of buyback recycling centers where on a Monday morning after a big weekend of tourists coming and consuming beverages, you might have a lineup of 20, 30 folks in shopping carts that have collected containers from around the city who are looking to redeem those containers. And landlords have begun, as those lines have gotten longer, as the concentration of recycling has focused on just a handful of remaining recycling locations, some of those landlords have chosen to close those recycling centers, to kick out the recycling center.
What do you see as being some of the best solutions to the problem, Mark? How can California kind of get back to its recycling rates of 2013, the 85% levels?
Well, California's recycling law needs a tune-up. The legislature has to authorize CalRecycle, which is the state recycling agency, to use the money that they have to compensate recyclers. There is a mechanism in place to compensate recyclers. The payment level is too low. The legislature can act this month to amend the state budget to allow CalRecycle to utilize the money that it has to compensate recyclers at a level that's sufficient to cover the cost of recycling. In the scheme of things, it's a relatively small investment that will pay dividends in terms of reduced waste, reduced litter, and increased recycling. Over the long term, it's important that the law be updated to make sure that every manufacturer is responsible for covering the full cost of recycling their containers. You know, I mentioned the 65%. So the current law requires beverage manufacturers to cover 65% of the cost of recycling. Because we're recycling more than 65% of containers, that means that in the long term, there may not be enough money to cover that cost of recycling. So the law needs to be updated so that manufacturers are responsible for covering the full cost of recycling their containers. And again, who else is going to do that? The taxpayers shouldn't be responsible for paying the net cost of recycling a plastic container versus a glass container versus an aluminum can. Each container type has its own unique net cost of recycling, and it's the beverage manufacturers that make the decision as to which package to use. And there are, you know, I think folks are familiar with the different types of plastic containers that are out there. Some of those plastic containers have a much higher cost of recycling than other types of containers. I mean, think about, you know, polystyrene containers. There are juices that are sold in California in polystyrene cups. You know, think of sometimes you go to the grocery store or a cafeteria or something, and there's a polystyrene cup of juice with a aluminum foil lid over the top. That's a very expensive container to recycle because there's very few of them. There's very little market for recycling those polystyrene containers. That's a unique cost associated with recycling that container. Taxpayers shouldn't be covering that unique cost. The beverage manufacturer needs to internalize that cost. And at some point in time, they need to make the decision that the cost of recycling this polystyrene cup or this, you know, polyvinyl chloride container is too expensive. We need to move to a container with a lower net cost of recycling. That's a market-based signal. We're not benefiting anyone when we hide the ball, when we hide the net cost of recycling from the producers and consumers of these products.
He's the executive director of Californians Against Waste, Mark Murray. Mark, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Great opportunity. Thank you so much. Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by the Budos Band and John Lee Hooker.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.